Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock back again on this Wednesday episode of the podcast. It's Combine Week, and not only are there heights, weights, and everything happening, and some workouts to happen later in the week and over the weekend, but coaches, GMs taking the podium, talking to media members, so we have some news to talk about. We haven't really heard from the 49ers since the end of the Super Bowl, and it was very disappointing. Kyle Shanahan spending some time in Cabo and ran into some players there and actually golfed together. So getting reset, getting back into the 2020 offseason now, and Kyle Shanahan's going to get deep into the scouting process now. And it's pretty late for a head coach to be getting into the process. And I'm sure all the scouts and GMs and everything have that going. But we'll talk a little bit about what we heard there, some rumblings from the Combine. And of course, we'll dip into this mailbag as well as we usually do with Nick. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. Email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Twitter is the best place to get those questions in here. If you want to get involved in a mailbag, just say hi or just follow along with me and the podcast. You can find this on all of your favorite podcast apps and LockedOn49ers.com. And now let's bring on today's guest.
Nicholas Winkler, come on down.
Nick, how are you, sir? You didn't go to Cabo, but have you completely reset? You getting pumped for this 2020 offseason?
I reset a couple days after the Super Bowl, man. Yeah, I did my morning and, you know, and did all the what ifs and all this and that. And I'm ready to go, man. I'm loving that it's Combine Week. I love that they're talking about, you know, adding a playoff game and maybe a 17 game. Just news. You know, it's just new stuff in the NFL. Put the past behind us. Let's move forward. You got guys talking. You got Lynch being interviewed at the Combine saying all kinds of cool things. You got jokes being made about quarterbacks' hands, and you know that's always a good time. Always brings me back to the Alex Smith days. Like, yep. this is a fun time.
It's awesome. Bengals fans get to go through that now. They get to draft a skinny quarterback, number one overall, that has small hands, and every bad throw he makes for the rest of his career, they get to blame his hand size on, and they get to argue about whether or not he was the right pick because of hand size. We went through that with the 49ers and Alex Smith, and it's hilarious to look back on when you know your team is not in that situation anymore.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. And, you know, it's Burrow's so funny, too. I hope everybody out there saw his tweet where he's like, oh, well, I guess I got to quit playing football, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's not nothing, and definitely you want bigger hands. There's a reason Tom Brady deflated footballs. The better grip, better it is. I use the reference of Michael Jordan. You ever seen old Michael Jordan clips or people who were old enough to watch him play live back in the day? And you see him just holding that ball out, palming it, and there's so much control that happens with the ball and in sports. And hands are important because your hands and your feet are often overlooked. And it's not nothing that he's got small hands and he's going into an environment in Cincinnati, most likely, where the weather's not great. So wind, cold.
It's going to be cold.
It's going to be somewhat hard to throw. And it's a little bit harder to throw NFL balls than it is college balls. So
you're right.
It's not nothing, but it's not the biggest deal. And he was under the threshold of what teams normally want, but it wasn't so small that, you know, we haven't seen quarterbacks play well with small hands before in the NFL. So it's up to Joe Burrow to be a good quarterback. The hands aren't going to be the thing that ends it for him. But right. It's just another thing. You're an NFL quarterback. There's always so much. And just to have that one extra thing that people can talk about. And I guarantee in 5 years, people will be talking about Joe Burrow's small hands when something bad happens with the Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy, right? That's an easy way to just be like, oh, see, we knew. We knew going in that this was going to be the issue. I wish I had it in front of me, but I know that there was some Beckett when Jimmy Garoppolo was at the Combine or something. They compared his hands to someone to another quarterback's. And one guy said such different things. Like one quarterback, he's like, oh, 9 1/4. It's, oh, man, this is going to be worrisome for him, blah, blah, blah. And then with Garoppolo, it was the same exact size. He's like, that's right at the threshold. He'll be fine. It's like, wait, that's the same size for two different guys.
It's crazy, it's man. It's crazy.
You can make, whatever you want a situation to look like, you can say what you want to make it work.
You mentioned John Lynch talking to reporters. Did anything stand out to you? The one thing that I saw, speaking of Jimmy Garoppolo, was that he really expects another jump from Jimmy Garoppolo, and I do too. I don't think it's going to be the Matt Ryan jump we saw from year one to year two under Kyle Shanahan, but there could be still, and I expect there to be, a better Jimmy Garoppolo in 2020, another year removed from the torn ACL, and he's only had that one full season as a starting quarterback in the NFL, let alone under Kyle Shanahan, just be more comfortable with Kyle Shanahan's playbook, and another year removed from that ACL, I expect him to be better next year.
How could you not? I mean, you're talking about a guy that's done nothing but just get better. You know, every year he's getting better and better. It's a system that you need to know the ins and outs. You need to know every little thing and what every little guy's doing and how you check out of it and this and that. And a lot of anticipation that goes into it as well. And you're talking about a guy who's going to have a receiver in Deebo Samuel who really just took a huge step forward this season. He's going to have another year. You know, he's going to be a year older. He's going to be a year crisper. He's going to hopefully he's learned from Emmanuel Sanders and everything he taught him about, you know, you got to train. You got to learn stuff. You got to do it. You got to work hard. And hopefully, you know, you get Jalen Hurd back. You get Trent Taylor back. You get these weapons back that they didn't have last season, that they had in the preseason. They thought, oh, we're going to be set. And then these guys all disappeared. So, yeah, you're right, man. It's nothing but the sky's the limit with this football team, especially when it comes to Jimmy Garoppolo.
Kyle Shanahan spoke about Deebo Samuel. He was asked about him a lot, actually, at the podium at the Combine Tuesday. He had this to say about his wide receiver that's going into his second year.
Because of how good of a football player he is. And when I say that, I don't mean the receiver position. I mean, he is a very good receiver and will only get better. But Deebo is as fearless of a rookie as I've ever been around. Extremely tough. Wants the ball in his hands. Will fight for everything. Can play injured. The game was never too big for him. The moment was never too big for him. And that's why he helped us huge this year. He can get a lot better developing his routes and things like that. And while he continues to do that, it's nice that you don't have to wait on all that. You can still use him because of how tough he is in every other aspect.
I think it's pretty important what he said there, Nick, about playing injured. And he kind of went over it really fast. And I know he mentioned something about George Kittle going into year two of his career when he had that breakout. He was talking about how he's taking care of his body and getting himself ready to play. And you're going to play injured when you're in the NFL. And you maybe start thinking about, okay, well, what's going on with Dante Pettis not having the right mindset? Maybe that's it.
Right.
Like every little Nick is like, I can't play unless I'm 100%. You got to play injured in the NFL. You got to be a tough guy. You got to win dirty. You got to win when there's contact in the NFL. If you're a running back, you're not just going to have these wide open spaces where you can use your athleticism and run around people all day. When you're a pass rusher, you've got to use your technique and your hands, and you've got to work and use power and speed to power and bull rush guys sometimes. And so almost every position on the field, including the positions where you think, oh, these are the pretty boys, these are the fast guys, but no, cornerback, wide receiver, you have to win dirty sometimes. And that's the thing that's been impressive about Deebo Samuel is he's a beast, and I love the way Kyle Shanahan put it there. It's not just a wide receiver. He's a good football player. That allowed him to have the ability to develop, and you saw him get the ball handed off to him. He was used as a running back practically half the time as a rookie, and now he's been allowed the time and the opportunity to develop, and he should be a lot better along with Garoppolo going into next year.
Yeah, it's just such a difference. And you watch Deebo Samuel's game and you watch Dante Pettis' game. It's like one of them goes and gets the ball and doesn't care if another guy's about to hit him or if that guy's going to catch the ball. Like, he's going to run through somebody to catch that ball. He's going to run through somebody to get to that first down marker. He's going to run through somebody to get into the end zone. And then the other guy's finesse. You know, he runs crisp routes. He's very smooth. You mentioned he was kind of like a bendy guy when he runs and things like that. They're just totally opposite ends of the spectrums when it comes to this. And it just looks like one of them fits a whole lot better in the NFL and in this Kyle Shanahan scheme. And it's pretty clearly the Deebo Samuel style.
And I know about this firsthand. I've been playing a lot of basketball this offseason. I'm trying to get into better shape. It's not really working out too great. But I don't.
Better than not doing it, though.
Yeah. And I'm 6'4". So if I show up to a pickup game, I'm basically treated like I'm 7'6", right?
You're first, second, or third pick.
Yeah, but I might as well be Sean Bradley. You know, it's like you're a goon center because you're 6'4". I'm like, I can run the floor, okay? I'm not just like this big goon. But sometimes you'll get that matchup. Whoever the biggest guy on the other team, whether he's short and wide or whether he's tall, I end up guarding that guy unless there's multiple big guys around. And usually there's not, you know, average person isn't that big. So I'm usually one of the taller people out there. And if that guy likes to bang, that's not fun for me. I don't want to bang. I'm out here just playing some pickup hoops or some rec league hoops. I can outrun this guy. If he wants to bang, fine. I'll pull him away from the hoop and I'll let somebody else bang inside and have their matchup, and then I'll outrun him down the floor. I don't want to bang, but Deebo Samuel, he's okay. He will bang.
He does.
And so that's why I'm sitting here talking about stuff, and Deebo Samuel's out there being a great player.
He bangs.
You got to bang. I mean, that's like, if you can't bang, you can't play for me.
That's right. Yeah. You want that in your wide receiver, man.
Absolutely.
And the 49ers have that.
every position you want that. That's what's awesome about the 49ers roster, the way it's constructed. They're like nice guys. They seem like genuine dudes that you would want to hang out with off the field, but they're mean and nasty on the field. That's a hard combination to have.
And you know, Dante Pettis isn't. And you could just see it. And you see it, you know, in his style of play. And that's, I'm sure, why he's not out there on the football field. It just takes one time where you kind of alligator arm a pass, you know, and you don't, because you're afraid of getting hit. And that Shanahan just doesn't seem like the type of guy that takes that, even in practice, where he's just like, nope, that's not going
to
work.
I don't have the audio, but Shanahan talked about Dante Pettis too. He's like, I just want him to have a monster offseason. I want him to come in as a monster. And I think it's part of that. I think it's mostly mindset, because we've seen him. He's got wiggle. He's loose. He can get open. He's got nice, pure hands as a wide receiver. So he's got to get through the banging part, right? He's got to be prepared to bang. Anyway, let's move on. We got some mailbag questions to get to. Let's keep it rolling here. Combine week at Locked On 49ers. This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. And I can attest to it. Going to spring training is awesome for any baseball fan. It's just a fun vacation, fun place to get away, great food. You'll rub elbows with baseball people and broadcasters, and it's just a really cool time. 10 stadiums, 15 Major League Baseball teams, 75-degree temperatures, all 10 stadiums in the greater Phoenix area within 50 miles. Meet the players, get autographs before games, check out the upcoming prospects. One of my favorite things to do, go prospecting, find out who the next Major League stars are going to be. Amazing restaurants, tons of bars, craft breweries, outdoor adventures, and hiking, biking. And you can even check off some must-see destinations from your bucket list, like the Grand Canyon. Bringing the kids along to spring training, Arizona is a fantastic destination for families. Horseback rides to games, activities, wildlife parks, science museums, aquariums. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining. I want to start out with a tweet from Matthew, who shouts out Nick. He says, hey, Nick. Hey, BD.
Hey, Matthew.
Is this the year we draft Joe Staley's replacement, or do you think he's already on the roster? Shout out to Little Leo. Thank you for shouting out Little Leo. Leo, I took him out to the park. Speaking of basketball, he was trying to dribble a basketball. Not great at it. A little bit too big. Mm-hmm. Trying to throw a wiffle ball at the hoop from way down low where he's at, because he's not a large human yet, and he was not even close. So we got to work on that.
He's going to be, though. He got some of his dad in him, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, my wife's family's short. We'll see which side he gets, if he gets the height or he gets the smarts from my wife's side of the family. And Joe Staley's replacement, what do you think? The only person that could be Joe Staley's replacement, well, technically, if you move Mike McGlinchey from the right side to the left side, he would be Joe Staley's replacement, and then you would need someone to replace Mike McGlinchey. So who's that offensive tackle replacement? Daniel Brunskill is about the only person on the roster that it could be, right?
Yeah, I mean, he looks like he has a bright future with the 49ers. And I don't know if you necessarily go out early and try to get Staley's replacement. But, yeah, they've always got to be thinking about the offensive line. I mean, there was a time this year where they had two backup tackles in there. So it's one of those positions that's always of need. And you don't want to think of Joe Staley leaving, but he's up there. You know, he doesn't have a whole lot of years left in him. And yeah, maybe McGlinchey is that answer. Maybe Brunskill's that answer. I mean, maybe Skoll's that answer. Like there's a lot of possibilities out there when it comes to the 49ers. But I think going into the draft, I think it's going to be a best position available. Like who's the best guy out there right now? Like, okay, yeah, we're going to stock up there, because you really look around like, yeah, they need corner help. Yeah, they might need some defensive line help. Yeah, they could probably use another wide receiver. They could use it. You know, there's a need everywhere at this point. So I don't know if they're going to specifically go in looking for Staley's replacement. But, yeah, I mean, it's got to be something that they're thinking about.
I didn't mention school. I don't know if he's necessarily someone who would be a future starter, but a nice depth piece there.
Right. Brunskill. I mean, he's young. There's a lot of time left, for these guys.
Brunskill might end up being a starting guard, depending on what happens with Mike Person this year, and potentially someone who could bounce out to tackle. I liked what I saw there at tackle. I think, I tend to think the guy who replaces Joe Staley, and look, you're not going to one-for-one replace Joe Staley. Joe Staley's been a really good player, a special person in the franchise for a long time, but you hope you get a really good starting offensive tackle once he does retire. And I'm not against using pick 31 if that's what you think is there. And that player could play guard and start at guard for a year or two until Staley's done, then bounce out to tackle. So I think you should try to find his replacement, see how much depth you can create on the offensive line. Every team in the league needs offensive linemen. And then if you get lucky, then maybe you don't have to spend a super high pick or a bunch of money when Joe Staley does retire. Let's say Joe Staley retires next offseason, the 49ers didn't find a suitable replacement, then you got to go spend a lot, either cash free agent wise or a first round draft pick. And you have to, because you have to have those really good starting tackles, and really you have to have pretty good starting five on the offensive line. And speaking of best player available that you mentioned, Claudio asks, I think that the 49ers might address BPA at pick 31.
Yeah.
49ers on the clock, and Cesar Ruiz, who is a center, Xavier McKinney, Alabama safety, and Jeff Gladney, which is TCU cornerback, are available. Who would you choose? Let's say you have them all graded equally, Nick. You have a center, a safety, and a corner. Which one of those positions do you like right now at 31?
Oh, that's a tough call. I'd probably go corner.
I would too. And I don't know about these three guys. I haven't done enough work to have a final grade on which of these three players I like the best. Cesar Ruiz out of Michigan is a popular name actually this week. I've seen him pop up on a couple of mock drafts for the 49ers at pick 31. And I think center is a very important position to Kyle Shanahan. If there's any questions about the long-term health of Weston Richburg, or maybe they realize, okay, well, he's making a little bit too much money, so at some point he might get cut. We need to develop a potential replacement for him. And again, Ruiz is someone who can play guard and then kick into center. So you have that flexibility with someone like him. If you think he's the best player when you're there at 31, I'm not against that. Safety is a little bit more difficult. I think safety has to be one of those players that it's like, this guy is amazing, we can't pass up on him. But I think the 49ers love Tart. I think the 49ers love Ward and will probably try to re-sign him. And if the 49ers don't re-sign Ward, I'm not so sure that they don't want to give that job to Tarvarius Moore anyway. So I just think when it comes down to it at pick 31, safety won't be the biggest need. And unless that's far and away the best player, I would probably shy away from that position there. And safety is a position that you can tend to find later in the draft or cheaper in free agency, which is why I think Jimmy Ward's not going to make that much money if he starts talking to other teams, and the 49ers might benefit from letting him talk to some other teams and then be like, yeah, see, you weren't going to make that much, so come back and we'll sign. And then Jeff Gladney, he's a skinny, fast cornerback. He does have some length, so that could fit what the 49ers want to do. If you're picking a first-round corner, see, this is the same thing with the Niners' scheme, is they run a lot of cover three, but if I'm drafting a corner in the first round, I want him to be a really good man corner, but also be able to fit my scheme. So that'd be ideal for the 49ers to be able to do both. So when they need to man up, they can count on their cornerbacks to man up and follow a receiver around the field, but they still have that requisite length and they still have the skills that you look for in a cover three type corner. And they're going to have a bunch of free agents at the cornerback position. So the benefit of having a good deep roster is that you can look an extra year ahead, and you can draft your offensive tackle even though you don't need him quite yet. You can draft your cornerback even though you don't have that need quite yet as a starter. So I like those positions for the 49ers in the first round. Offensive tackle and cornerback, maybe wide receiver more so than some other positions that might be easier to find later in the draft that they don't cost you as much in free agency, like interior offensive line and safety. This one from 49 M. Bell Kings. M. Bell Kings. 49er M. Bell Kings.
M. Bell Kings.
Something like that. I don't know. some of these names, I just...
Melbourne Kings?
Can we do that? Let's just call him Bob.
Okay.
From Bob on Twitter. do you think the Niners should take the best available guy at 31 or trade down? So let's stay on this BPA topic. You've got a guy that you like, and there's a clear difference between the player here at 31 for you or trading down for multiple picks. Let's say the Browns. I've looked at the numbers. I talked about it before on the podcast. The Browns are 10 picks later, 41. And then if they threw in their pick late in the third round, they have an extra third rounder. I think it's around pick 90. So they're giving you 90 and 41 for 31. You like the player on the board. Probably won't be there at 41. Maybe he is. Are you looking for depth? Are you looking for more players? Or are you just trying to get the best player you can at 31, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. Like, how much do you like this guy? Do you like him head and shoulders above everybody else that's the best player available, that, you know, your next 10 guys that might be still around when you get that Browns pick? So I think you got to weigh that in. You also got to think, you're getting a whole nother player out of this move. So is that player at 31 really worth a whole extra person that is on your roster when you don't have a whole lot of draft picks. So I'd be surprised, honestly, if the 49ers do make that selection at 31 just because of their lack of draft picks. I do think they might try to turn it into a few extra guys that they can have come in and compete for spots, you know, and you said it, like, it's a future game here too. There's going to be not just this offseason, but, you know, the next two or three off seasons where the 49ers are going to need to get some young guys in there and not be able to pay a bunch of money when they're paying Kittle and probably Buckner and, you know, a few other guys that are still owed a bunch of money or will be owed a bunch of money come that time. And when you don't have all the draft picks like you do this season going in, you got to find another way to get some, and it might just be moving down 10 spots. So for me, I think that the only way you pick that guy 31 and don't make that deal is if he's just like, wow, we thought this guy was going to go at 20, you know, or at 15, and he's still around and we need to go get him.
Yeah, it's hard. It's very hard to know without attaching a name to it, right, and say, oh, this guy I would definitely take and not trade down. I think it would have to be that, though. It'd have to be like, okay, this guy far and away is the only player left on our board who had a firm first round grade. And I think it's a big drop to the next guy. So let's go ahead and stick here. Or they just don't get an offer. I think those are the only two ways that they don't trade down, is if they don't get a good offer or if there's a guy way too good to pass up. And it'd have to be a significant difference.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
All right, more mailbag coming up. This from Dan on Twitter. Do you see them bringing back all three quarterbacks we had on the roster again?
Probably.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe they kept all three last year.
So would I would have, whatever the offer was, and I think they got, you know, whatever that offer was in the offseason that I think they got, that Kyle Shanahan sort of, he said it without saying it, and maybe I'm reading too much into it. It sounded like they got some offer that wasn't good, you know, a late day three pick for CJ Beathard. Mm-hmm. I would have taken that. It's like, and it's just, he was literally inactive all season. He was a wasted roster spot, and I don't see him as that potential NFL starting quarterback like Kyle Shanahan said he thinks he is. And he says you don't get rid of a starting quarterback, which I would agree, but I don't think C.J. Beathard is that. I think he's proven that. But Kyle Shanahan likes C.J. Beathard, obviously he likes Nick Mullins, who was the number two and did have a uniform on every week, even though he didn't play. I just think that roster spot's too valuable, and I wouldn't carry three, but judging by Kyle Shanahan and what the 49ers have done, it's going to be the same three coming back again.
Yeah, it's hard to predict that they wouldn't just based on past history. Like, it'd be a little bit silly to be like, oh, no, they're going to ditch him now. Well, if they were just going to ditch him, they would have done it last year and gotten a little something for him, because his stock's dropped even more now, right? I mean, he's another year removed from playing football or even just being active on a roster. So maybe they like him, and, you know, maybe they find someone that wants to take Mullins. I mean, but again, his stock has fallen as well. He came off of a pretty good end to the season in 2018. So I don't know. It's a little baffling to me still what happened last year with these three quarterbacks. So it's ridiculous to try and predict what's going to happen, because I have no idea.
It's hard to get into Kyle Shanahan's head sometimes, just when you think you have a
which
beat
is good
on it.
Too.
Right. No, yeah, that's fine. And that's the other thing, though. You mentioned it. If he likes C.J. Beathard that much, then trade the guy you can get a little something for in Nick Mullins, right?
Right. And maybe they didn't get any offers for him.
And maybe, who knows? Maybe they didn't get any offers for either guy. But
right.
It's a wasted roster spot right now for that third quarterback that's never suiting up. And they had some injury problems last year, and it's just not ideal.
Nope.
Go to Harp via email. He says, a bit early for draft questions, but it's never too early for draft questions, Harp. He says, assuming the Niners aren't able to trade back, best player available at 31 might be a wide receiver. I've read it won't be surprising to see wide receivers that would normally go top 15 in prior years fall to the end of the first round when we pick. Assuming the Niners bring back Sanders, would you still target a wide receiver if an elite prospect falls to 31 or go in another direction? That's a great question, Harp. I don't think re-signing Sanders prevents the 49ers from doing anything at 31, just because it's two different things. You have your starter right now this year, and then you're looking ahead, and usually it takes a year or two for a wide receiver anyway, so you're talking about drafting a future starter at 31. As long as you feel pretty good about everywhere else on your roster, there's no super glaring needs and there's no other really good prospects at another position that you could go to at 31, I would have no problem still drafting a wide receiver at 31, even if you do bring back Sanders.
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a big question mark right now at wide receiver, because you got Bourne, who's going to be a free agent. You know, you've got Pettis, who's a huge question mark. You got Taylor, who's a huge question mark. You got Hurd, who's a huge question mark. You know, there's your boy, I can't even think of his name right now. Richie James. Richie so James. There's so many wide receivers already on this squad right now that, to me, I don't see them using that pick 31 on another wide receiver. I feel like that's another big jump for them to use a draft pick that they don't have another draft pick for so long. Like, I feel like there's so many other positions that need addressing that don't have all of these possible lottery tickets, you know, in the waiting in the wings, I guess, so to speak. So I don't know. I don't see it. I've seen a lot of people talk about wide receiver attached to the Niners there at 31, but I don't know. I think that's more of a luxury pick at this point.
There's only about three wide receivers that would fit that for me where it's like, oh yeah, no matter what, let's just draft this guy because he's too good.
If he's still around.
And I don't see any of those three. And I'm talking about the two Alabama wide receivers, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, and then CeeDee Lamb out of Oklahoma. I don't see either any of them falling. Maybe CeeDee Lamb gets the treatment because if he doesn't run well or something like that, could slide a little bit like we've seen some other wide receivers fall late one or into the second round to be really good. And at that point, you make that pick. Maybe there's another wide receiver or two that I'll continue to watch that could be available at 31 that I'd say, yeah, let's just go for it no matter what. But there's so much value in this draft in the second and third round that if you've got a trade offer, I think if you're looking wide receiver, you would still move down and you would have a really good opportunity to draft a player that's just as good, most likely in the second or third round, almost as you do at 31. So that's more likely, I think, if you're going wide receiver, that's a trade down scenario. But potentially there could be a wide receiver that falls to 31 that changes that. But that's the way I'm looking at the wide receiver position right now. Second, third, fourth round, that's the money. That's the value for wide receivers in this draft, in my opinion. And in fact, I think this wide receiver class is getting a little bit overrated being compared to being as good or better than 2014. I don't think it's as top heavy with the best guys. I think the strength here is depth, which that class also had a lot of depth. And there was guys like Allen Robinson in the second round, and there was Jarvis Landry in the second round, the very last pick of the second round, and there was freakish guys like Martavis Bryant in the third, fourth round.
Yeah, it's
that was an amazing class. I think people forget how good that class was. This is a good, deep class. I wouldn't put it on par with 2014, though.
You're right. I had forgotten, so yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to – I mean, those are some freaky, talented guys there in that class.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man.
Let's go to Barnaby. He says, daily devoted listener, love your podcast. Hope Leo's doing well. Thank you very much, Barnaby. I appreciate it. He didn't say anything about Penelope or Bixby.
My kids are doing fine, too. Don't worry about it.
And shout out to Barnaby's son, Jace. I want to get that out of the way here. Shout out to Jace. He said he's a big fan of the Niners and asks for the latest news on the 49ers every day. Thanks to you, I usually have an answer. So that's awesome. Appreciate that, Barnaby. And shout out to your son, Jace.
Yeah, and since we're talking about that sort of thing, did you see the text or the tweet about a guy whose son did a little project at school, and during his sign-off, he dropped a wink. See ya.
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that. That was awesome.
That's so awesome, man. I love that. That's good stuff.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
Barnaby says, I wanted to follow through on the scenario of tagging Armstead and then trading him for a draft pick, hopefully a second rounder. Which veteran defensive tackle free agent do you think we could get, say, an affordable two-year deal to replace Armstead, perhaps a veteran who wants to play in the Super Bowl? What do you think about signing Ha-Ha Clinton Dix at free safety, upgrade from Ward, ? Shouldn't
that's
break the
call.
Bank. And so, first of all, on the Ha-Ha thing, no. I mean, if you're going to spend money on free safety, bring back the guy you know that's good.
Yeah,
you know that
plays in your system already, yeah.
The replacement for Jimmy Ward is either Tarvarius Moore or another draft pick.
Yeah.
When it comes to defensive linemen, I agree. I think tag and trade is the way to go with Armstead if you can get a second rounder.
100%.
I tend to not worry as much about the interior defensive line. I would be, and this is what sucks about this draft class. I think the best strategy would be to tag and trade Armstead and then draft a young edge rusher, a defensive end at 31. But this is an awful edge class outside of Chase Young, who's probably going to go number two overall, who's awesome. It's not a great class. I don't think we're going to see one of those Harold Landrys fall into the second round, which would be a perfect exact type of player you would want, like the next D Ford style of player to replace potentially D Ford and help you replace Eric Armstead at defensive end. And I think the interior defensive line is a place that's easier to find a player. So you could draft a guy like that later. DJ Joneses of the world. Just try to find some stout guys that can work inside. You already have DeForest Buckner. You're paying a lot of money for. I don't think you even have to go to the free agent market and spend a bunch of money on a veteran. Now, if you do have find a good veteran, like let's say Snacks Harrison was just cut the other day by the Lions. And you know,
that's a great name.
Yeah, awesome. Nose tackle, run stuffer. We saw the 49ers run defense suffer a little bit when DJ Jones was out of the lineup. He was pretty important. You know, have a guy like that inside. You could put both those guys inside on early downs, stuffing the run with basically two nose tackles. You could use DeForest Buckner in Eric Armstead's old role, free him up to play outside on edge a little bit, and then move back inside on passing downs. I would love to see that. And
there you
then
go.
Develop a young defensive end to eventually replace D Ford if D Ford's chronic knee issues hamper him so much that maybe this is his last year with the 49ers. So that would be the ideal scenario. I don't think that player is going to be there for the 49ers at 31 as an edge rusher, just because there's not many good ones in this class. I've been scouring and I can't find anybody that I would like as even a late round flyer, really. So unfortunately, not a great class for that. But yeah, maybe there's a cheap veteran option, but I don't think it's super necessary. But they should definitely be drafting some defensive linemen if they can in the draft. You got to keep that depth strong. That was the strength of the team. You let Armstead walk. You can't forget about that position now, even though you still have some really good players and DJ Jones coming back. But a lot of those guys have been so injured. Ronald Blair and right. Julian Taylor and Kentavious Street, and they're all talented, but it's hard to count on all of those guys too.
And Brian, I'm gonna be honest with you. I think the 49ers are missing out not having you in their draft room. I mean, you need to be in there. You need to be helping them out, looking to the future. You do your homework.
I mean, the 49ers are doing a pretty good job. It seems like the New York Giants and the Cleveland Browns, they're the ones that are really missing out.
Right? I know. Who are they? Who do they have ahead of you right now doing that job?
I just saw a quote from David Gettleman, who's basically, he's becoming one of my least favorite GMs in the league, from the New York Giants, David Gettleman. He said, he was asked about what offensive scheme, because they changed coaching staffs this offseason. He was asked about what offensive scheme the team is going to run. And his answer was, I wish I had it in front of me. I'll try to look for it really quick. But basically his answer was, offense is offense. You snap the ball to the quarterback and then you play.
That simple, dude.
What are you talking about, man?
Wow. What a tool.
It was so stupid. It's like, look, I don't know if you're just treating the media dumb or if you believe that.
Right. But, or if you just have no idea, so that's your answer?
I mean, come on. Why would you even try to sneak that pass? Oh, here it is. He said, offense is offense. Somebody snaps it. Somebody catches it. It's all just offense.
Yeah, that just sounds like somebody who has no idea what sports is. And is like, oh, yeah, I'll explain offense to you.
Yeah, sorry, Dave. Why don't you go draft a running back number 2 overall and waste his prime years winning 0 football games? That's smart.
Right. You're a big Gettleman fan.
All right, let's get out of here, Nick. Great stuff, as always. Thank you so much.
Sounds good, buddy. My pleasure.
Thanks, everybody, for getting involved with that mailbag. Keep those questions coming. I see them, and I plug them in, and there's always too many to get to, but I do appreciate everybody who sends me messages, even if they're not even football-related. You can find me on Twitter at BDPeacock. You can find Nick at Bay Area Wink, and I'll be back right here tomorrow. Locked on 49ers.
See ya, Ivan.